see is lost in the memory. August slipped away into a moment in time, 'cause it was never mine. And I can see us twisting in bedsheets. August sipped away like a bottle of wine, 'cause you were never mine. Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1, The Touch of August Edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Laughlin, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, including interviews with artists and creators across the county. This episode is being released on the last day of August, and hence the title, A Touch of August. As the calendar turns to September, it's an interesting mix of summer activities coming to an end and fall activities revving up. I don't know about you, but I spent my summer feeling that touch of August. Performing at Shakespeare in Delaware Park this summer after 2 summers of no shows due to COVID, it felt great to be back on the hill and performing for so many people. And yet, the physical toll was intense. Fatigue and exhaustion, followed by a pulled hamstring muscle for the final 2 weeks. The pleasure of performing mixed with a sense of something coming to an end. That's the touch of August. But one thing is for sure, it's great to be back behind the microphone, getting ready for another season of bringing to the region all the great arts events that Northern Chautauqua has to offer. I want to start off by thanking Rick Davis once again for giving me this opportunity to create this podcast. The first season was loads of fun, and with any luck, this upcoming second season will bring as much, and perhaps even more fun than the last. So spread the word. We're back, and we're ready to podcast.
Well, here's to the ageless. Stop in time, and here's to the guest list. Cut the line, and here's to the tip jar. Grow in dust, and here's to the bassist. Here's to us and to everybody feeling good, everybody feeling fine, everyone who had a taste of something nice. Everybody wondering where they found the time for falling into summer sleep and summer wine. Here's to the reason.
It's a real treat to start off the second season by featuring an album release by a young man who hails from Fredonia. Ben Baker, who grew up on the banks of the Canada Way Creek, has released his new album, Many States, under the band name That One Crocodile. Ben runs a recording studio in Rochester, New York, and we had a great chat about his newly released album. Well, it's great to welcome to the podcast Ben Baker. Ben is a local musician. He was grew up in the Fredonia area and is out on his own trying to, make it as a musician. So welcome, Ben, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Now we're going to start because I think that people are going to say, well, I'd like to get local artists here. And people are going to say to me, well, what's the connection? But you've just released an album. I believe the title is Many States, and the group you call yourself is That One Crocodile. We'll get to that later. But you do have a connection with the 1891 Fredonia Opera House for this album.
I do, very specifically. As you say, I'm from Fredonia, grew up going to the Opera House and seeing that whole transformation. And when it was time to make this new record, I always like to record something in Fredonia. I'll come back and record vocals or something just to have that connection. And for this record, I ended up actually going to the Opera House and getting up on stage and playing the Steinway piano that they have up there. So all of the piano tracks you hear on Many States on the record are straight from the Opera House stage.
How did you like the acoustics for that? Did they work out for you?
It was incredible. It was so much fun. It was March of 2018, I believe, I went in there to record those tracks. I had reached out to Rick just with this wild idea, and he said, sure. And, you know, you have a vision of the Opera House of being, you know, on the stage, and you can either, you've seen it, or you can imagine it with the, you know, the balcony and the dome and all these things. And I rolled in on Sunday morning, and the screen was still down from the movie the previous night. So I had a slightly different visual experience than I expected. And I was in a, it ended up turning out phenomenally well. I got to sit back behind the screen with the big, you know, Voice of the Theater speaker still rolled up, for the movie. So that was, made it even more special. It was so much fun.
Did it take you a long time to record those tracks, or just one day?
It was a morning. I'd say it was maybe 3-4 hours I was in there. Did a few passes on some songs. I did just some improv. I ran out the clock a little bit just because I was having so much fun.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. So great. So let's talk about a little bit about your musical influences, how you got to this point in your career where you're writing all your own stuff, and you play several instruments too as well. How did all that come about?
A long process of trying things out and collaborating and just having fun. I just love to play things. I don't proclaim to play anything extravagantly well, but I like picking up instruments. I like just messing around. I do also run a little recording studio, so it's nice to be able to pick instruments up if people are coming in, they need drums on a track, I could play drums, things like that. So I play the majority of the instruments on this record, guitars, drums, the pianos, obviously. I play about half of the bass tracks. Another friend of mine plays that as well. So guitar is sort of my main instrument, but I've been playing a lot of drums recently and I really love it. So it was just a nice opportunity to, it's fun to play with people. It's great to be in a band, but especially recording this during COVID, it was really nice to be able to play the majority of it myself.
Oh yeah, that's, well, I am always amazed at what technology can do these days. I mean, the notion of a one man band is a lot different now than it was when I was growing up.
Sure. Yeah.
So let's talk about the album. You know, it's a recent release of yours, and it's called, the title of it is Many States. Can you talk about the title a little bit?
Yeah. The song came first. There is a title track on this record, which I don't always do. But the song Many States came, and it seemed such an apt description of a collection of songs in general. And then also this record has some sort of through lines of characters and locations. So it described to me pretty succinctly just the feeling of the headspaces one is in, both making a record and hopefully as a listener, if I've done my job.
Yeah, I mean, I did listen to the album. I'm going to talk about my impressions about that too with you. Just get a little discussion going on that. But I'm also interested in the title that you gave to the band, that one crocodile.
That one crocodile. Recently changed. For a good 10 or more years, basically starting like when I was in college, I was performing under the name Doc Baker's Traveling Musicological Extravaganza.
That's a mouthful.
Which was intentionally a mouthful, intentionally unwieldy, but I felt like I had outgrown it a little bit. So I was sort of casting around for names, at least for now. May change it again, we'll see. But one of the other contenders, probably one of the other top three at the time when I decided on the band name, was That One Crocodile. There's a moment in Peter Pan, which is a book that is really influential on me. We're in the very beginning. Smee and Captain Hook are standing on the deck of the ship, and Hook says, you know, Peter Pan, he, you know, cut off my arm and, or cut off my hand and fed it to the crocodile and this and that. And Smee says, oh yes, Captain, I've often noticed your fear of crocodiles. And Hook says, no, Smee, only that one crocodile.
That's perfect. That's really a nice story. I like that. All right, so let's get into the music here. Now, it's an interesting album. The my first impression, you know, and sort of reaction to it was this is not an album of music that has like a collection of songs where you spin the song and you can learn the lyrics and then the melody follows real easily and so on and so forth. There's a, it's a much more, instrumentally deep recording. It's not what I would call, I don't even know sometimes what popular music is anymore, but it's not something you're going to hear on, you know, a top 40 station or anything like that.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit about what that means to you, that developing that very deep, rich, almost non-melodic kind of sound?
Yeah, there's a lot of, this record especially leans into a lot of sort of noise and like atonal moments. I don't want to say that to put anybody off from it being musical in a sort of traditional sense,
right.
But it does, it blends a lot of sort of my like folk and almost country music, Americana influences with more of this freer improvisation, found sound, field recording kind of aspect. So there's some just bit, the first instrument you hear on the record is the piano.
Yes.
Ironically, but there's a little bit of like noise before that. There's sort of a tone setting instrumental piece at the beginning, which is something I find myself doing on a lot of releases, even though I tell myself this one's going to be the one without the, you know, musical intro, but this one's got the intro. so part of it was just the opportunity. You know, when I work on other people's records, it's often so time limited. But when you work on, you know, your solo project, you have, in a lot of ways, too much time, but you have ultimate sort of nitpicky power because you're not answering to anybody else. You're not answering to a clock and you're not billing yourself. So a lot of it was just to see if I could do things, you know, as an engineer to learn about how to record different things, see right. how things work. There's also just sort of a very narcissistic beauty in singing and playing along with yourself in yes. sort of a one man band setup. Uh-huh. So yeah, it's very sort of orchestral in the confines still of what one might call traditional music.
I was fascinated. I'm fascinated. I'm going to throw a name out at you because it came to me as I was listening to about halfway through or much more towards the end. And all of a sudden I said, no, I've heard this kind of music before. And then I thought about Twin Peaks and the composer Angelo Badalamenti, who did the composing for that, as well as a lot of other David Lynch things. You mm-hmm. you have any resonance to that?
I do. I have a appreciation for the compliment. I take that very much. It's interesting. I'm not a big like soundtrack person. That's never been, I've always gravitated towards more pop music as, you know, the broadest umbrella that can be. But I do enjoy a lot of like sound design elements to recording. That's something mm-hmm. that I often try and put in. So again, thinking about this record is sort of taken to the nth degree on all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. A lot of those works do have those sort of unsettling, maybe slightly atonal things that come in, or very quiet things that you don't really hardly notice, but your brain sort of picks up on. So I absolutely see the connection there.
And it creates a really kind of a very surreal experience for me at the same time that I'm kind of listening to, you know, a song. My lead into this interview was the cut called Summer Sleep, which was my favorite of the whole. Of
Thank
them.
You.
I just really liked that because it again, it had a, you know, it felt like summer. Everything about it felt like summer.
Thank
the
you
sounds,
so much.
The sound effects, the, mm-hmm. the lyrics. I just liked it. Where'd it come from?
That was, I started writing that song at a punk show. This being the sort of most quiet, most reserved song on the record. I started writing as sort of an image, like a scene building thing at a show between acts. Here's to the tip jar, the bassist, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think my instinct was to take it in that direction musically as well. And then just sort of the impulse, which in itself is rooted in the punk ethos in a lot of ways. No, I'm going to take this completely the other way. I'm going to play this completely on piano, which is not an instrument that I'm comfortable on. And I'm just going to orchestrate it from there. There is no guitar on that song whatsoever,
right.
even in the sound design area. So consequently, that was the only song that I recorded top down at the Opera House.
Ah.
All of the other songs had at least acoustic bones or something that I was coming in and playing along to the track. But that track, Summer Sleep, I played live probably 3 or 4 times at the Opera House. And then I can't recall now if it's one full performance or I chopped up some pieces from a longer, more improvisational part. And then from there at home, the second half of the song layers in a lot of synthesizers and noise and static and things. And that was certainly all done afterward.
The album's out. Where can people get it? All that kind of stuff.
It's available for streaming, sort of anywhere you stream your streams, Spotify, Apple Music, that sort of thing. You should be able to find it. It's also at you can buy it and download it from Bandcamp. I've got a Bandcamp page. That's okay. crockbaker.bandcamp.com.
Crockbaker. I'll put that in the show notes.
Perfect. And then just in the last couple of days, I've started talks. There's a little label out of Columbus, Ohio that does cassette releases, and we're going to put out a cassette.
Oh, great.
Hopefully before the end of the year, next couple of months, that should be out.
Oh, great. It's always nice to have something that's, you know, solid that people can grab. I think that's a good idea. Well, Ben, listen, I wish you a lot of luck with that. And it's always nice to see somebody, you know, from the area creating all this kind of unique art. And best of luck.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You bet. And maybe I'll get a chance to talk to you at some other time when you come out with another album. I can't believe this is the last one.
Yeah, no, we'll make it happen. And I always try and come through and play Fredonia Dunkirk when I can. So that'll be hopefully, again, before the end of the year, I'm going to start getting out again. So we'll make it happen.
Yeah, getting out is tough. I just got out from myself for the first time this summer. So it's like,
yeah, it's coming. It's time.
It's coming. It's time. Definitely. All right, Ben, thanks an awful lot.
Talk to you soon.
If you'd like more information on Ben Baker and his music, check out the show notes on the podcast webpage, aisleseat.podbean.com, for links to his Facebook and Instagram page, as well as Canada Way Records. In the meantime, here's a little more of Ben's music, a cut entitled Samaritan Ridge.
Up on Samaritan Ridge, stand in the sun, climb on the bridge. Point to your house down below, trace with your fingers the ways that you go. When you go, up on Samaritan Ridge, send out a smile, only a smidge. Tuck flowers into your hair, try not to worry, try not to care. When you're there,
the 1891 Fredonia Opera House has always been a great venue for orchestral music, especially small ensembles. David Rose, who serves as the head of the strings area at the SUNY Fredonia School of Music, and his wife, Anne Park Rose, will be presenting a concert of music for viola and piano to open the 2022-23 season at the Opera House. I spoke with both of them to get a little more detail about what's on the program. Now, joining me now is David Rose. David is the head of the strings faculty at the School of Music at SUNY Fredonia, and his wife, Anne Park Rose. And she's a local teacher down in Sinclairville, from what I understand, as well as a performer, both here in the United States and Canada. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you have a concert coming up at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House, a little concert for viola and piano. And I thought I'd ask you a little bit about your program. I noticed that I think it's going to be Brahms, Chopin, and also and some of your compositions. Is that correct?
It will be actually improvisation based on existing melody.
Oh, okay. That's great. Can you tell me, give me a little more detail about the pieces you're going to play?
Well, I think I don't have our program in front of me, but off the top of my head, I think we're starting with the Brahms Sonata for Viola and Piano. And that was written towards the end of his life. It's described as being in an autumnal period for him, which is a beautiful poetic way of imagining something that actually has a sound. So it doesn't have the stormy seas that you hear in his other music, and it's very easygoing and relaxed, and just one of the great, great and beautiful sonatas that he gifted viola players. And every morning, the viewers are sort of the listeners can't see this, but we're in our living room and the piano's right behind us, and Anne has been practicing the piano parts much harder than the viola part. So she's been practicing this thing madly day and night, and it's quite a tour de force. So we're looking forward to launching that one on a nice piano like the Opera House has. We just have an upright here. But do you have anything to say about the Brahms there, Anne?
It's a beautiful piece, but it's a beast.
Well, what makes it difficult? Just out of curiosity.
I have a very small hands to start with. I don't know. I mean, obviously people can't see it, but there are some of the notes that I don't think Brahms was as forgiving. The small hands, there's jumping all over around, but it's so beautiful. So it's, you know, I mean, what can I complain about it? It's when it's beautiful and it's Brahms, and we're just grateful that we can play this.
Well, and it's true that audiences don't often perceive this, but although it's a duo concert, it's one person, that's me, and then another person, that's Anne, 1 + 1 = 2. It's actually a trio concert, because any pianist is playing two parts. Their left hand is like a person, their right hand is like a person, but I'm only playing one part, so it's in some ways a trio. Anne's responsible for two parts, and I'm only responsible for one, so I've got the better end of the stick.
And what about the Chopin? I love Chopin music.
Oh yeah, and we're both incredible fans of Chopin. Mm-hmm. Our youngest son, who's a pianist also, he's passionate about Chopin. So this is a nocturne. I think we're ending the recital with this. It's one of his beautiful nocturnes. It's in D flat major on piano, but this one I transcribed many years ago to go on viola and have changed the key to make it a little bit friendlier. So hopefully Anne will forgive me, because Chopin is the pianist's composer. Almost everything he wrote was for piano. But the viola in this case takes the melody, and hopefully Anne will forgive me. But she's long loved Chopin and has actually played many of his piano works.
Mm-hmm. Now, I assume when I saw the sort of the bios and I saw the name Rose under some of the pieces, I assumed that was you, Anne, and you also have a background in music composition. So tell me a little bit about this improv stuff you're going to do. I always find that amazing, actually, that one can improvise with music.
Oh, thank you. Basically, improvisation is, as everyone knows, that it's spontaneous composition or something that you make it up right away. There are many different ways of improvising something that you can just come out of nowhere, or sometimes it's more planned, or sometimes you can also improvise tune based on the existing melody. What I'm trying to do for this concert is actually I'm trying to pull out improvise based on the melody of Sibelius's Finlandia theme. And the reason I wanted to do was because this I think this is a classical composition as well, but I thought that I can link that into improvisation, so I can introduce that to people in a familiar way, but also very different kind of a setting. It's not going to be exactly the same as Sibelius. It just will be including some of my thoughts and my interpretation of how I think about Finlandia might be. I mean, the way that I would like to think in many of my improvisation is I like to link what I think of my emotions going or what other people might be going through. And if I were to just explain a little bit about what I might be thinking that could be bridge to this music to other people, hopefully, is, you know, we went through so much the last 2 years with the pandemic and COVID, and it was difficult. And the world that we were seeing before and what's going on now and what will be going on in the future, we don't know what it is. But also just want to let you know that Finlandia is actually, there's a hymn, Christian hymn. It is a Be Still My Soul. I don't know if you heard of it, but basically the thought that I'm thinking about this music is with what's going on right now, but if we can just remember, the goal is to go back to this beautiful world that once was, but maybe different. We've learned a lot from it. We suffered a lot from it. And there are things that we would like to change, things we like to keep, all those kind of things, whatever it is, that we don't lose our hope, but we just remember that be still our soul and then just hope for it. So I'm hoping to bring that in, bridging between classical music and my thoughts and improvisation for people too. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, that's a wonderful sentiment. That's lovely. Thank you. So in other words, what the listeners will hear when they go see the concert will be something that you've basically created on the spot. I'm sure that you probably have a train of thought going into it, but nevertheless, it's an original composition right there. That's terrific. David, let me ask you a question about your decision to play the viola. I always wonder how musicians come to choose the instruments they eventually play, professionally. And you've chosen the viola. What is it about the viola that attracted you?
That's one of the sort of great fun games that one can play, is to look at a musician and imagine what they play or if they sing. And one can be more right than seems possible. Like, there are certain similarities that different musicians have. Now, I know when I was a very young child, four, my mother put me into Suzuki violin, and I initially balked at it. I did not want to do it, but I remember changing my mind. And when I was maybe 11, I played violin for 7 years. My teacher, who was a violist, was looking for kids to turn. Like, so the viola and the violin are rather similar. The viola is like a larger violin, and its range is a little bit lower than the violin. But the violinists are a supreme force that sort of take over the imagination, and they usually get the melody in concerts. The cellists also, this is the instrument that's played between the legs with the end pin going into the floor. They're a supreme force of nature too. They often take over concerts and play in a way that grabs a lot of attention. But the violas are sort of sandwiched between these two large forces and rarely capture the attention of either the composer or the audience. So it's a very hidden instrument, more secretive. In fact, I'll give you an insider tip. For all violists, when we go to the airport and have to bring our viola with us, we always say it's a violin, because there are a lot of people who don't even know what a viola is. And the last person you want to question this enormous bit of luggage is like an airport security person. So we all say it's a violin just to escape trouble. Violists are, they either come to the instrument with maybe a more a gentler nature and a lack of desire to take the spotlight, because the instrument we chose does not give the spotlight to us very often. So you have to kind of be okay being one of the less glitzier condiments in the musical sandwich, as it were. So violists sort of do not find themselves in the limelight, and maybe my teacher perceived that about me. I was too young to really declare an opinion, but he said, David, you should play the viola. And I said, yes, sir. And the rest is history. So I've been doing that since I was 11.
Hmm. So would it be accurate for me to say that violists are like the character actors in the theater, people who you see all the time on television, but you could never remember what their name is, or if you saw them on the street, you'd pass them right by.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's a really, really excellent analogy. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, good. I understand that being a character actor. And for you, the piano, I know you started early, obviously. Most pianists do. You started at the age of 5. What was it about the instrument that drove you forward with it?
I'm from South Korea, and my mother was a piano teacher. The studio in Korea is slightly different than how it goes with my understanding of North America. And here, people come here like once a week, and you have a private lesson usually. In Korea, where I grew up, is because my mother was a studio teacher, there if this was more geared toward groups, so I will have her students will come from like morning until night, and I will have like 20, 30 students or people throughout the day from night, like morning to night, except a Sunday when we went to church. So I just grew up with the pianos. We had about 8 to 9 pianos in the house, and it was filled with pianos. So I just started with it because my mother taught me, and then I just stick with it because it's just a lovely instrument. There's so much things we can do with this beautiful instrument. Yes.
David, I see that you are in the process or have completed the process of recording all 6 Bach cello suites. Is that correct?
They're in the can. That's in some ways the easy part. The editing them and all those other things kind of make me a little weak in the knees. I recorded them maybe 3 years ago on a sabbatical, and that seems like a long time actually, but I since then have been sort of performing them as a cycle, all 6 of them in one concert, just all over the place, and we'll be doing that a number of times, well, up in Canada actually, this fall. But that's my great love, and the one thing maybe in life that I need no motivation, I don't have to be pushed. I happily take out the viola and play Bach, and it's my great, great joy. So we are playing, I mean, I'm playing actually just 2 movements of Bach on this recital that come not from the cello suites, but were taken from the violin pieces. So there may be some people may not like that. We take the cello suites, the violas, we also take the violin things, but it works well because we have the same, our strings are the same as the cello, so we can play their music in the same key. We're very similar in our instrument in the way it's played to a violin, so we can also steal their repertoire. And they don't seem to mind because the violinists have an enormous treasure trove of great classics, as do the cellists. And the violists were not looked on as kindly by the great composers, so we do not have nearly as much music in our repertoire. So, but all that is to say that yes, the Bach is a great love, and I did record them a number of years ago, but have yet to release them.
So at some point in time, we can look forward to that, I'm sure. Do you have anything else about the concert you think will be unique, interesting?
We're doing another piece by Ravel, that's just incredibly beautiful. And Anselm,
Ravel. I didn't see that one mentioned. Yeah, I love him.
Ravel was really taken by, he attended some Jewish services and would see, he went to a service where somebody had died, and they observed the Kaddish, which is a prayer of mourning. And so he wrote this piece inspired by them. We're playing that, and that's again just marvelous, marvelous stuff. And then the Chopin is a nocturne, and our recital's at night, of course. So by the time we get around to the Chopin, it'll probably be 9:20 p.m. and everybody's going to be ready for beddie bye, and we're playing that nocturne, which is a piece meant for the night, and it's achingly beautiful. It doesn't get better than that. So I doubt anybody will leave wanting their money back. It'll be a really like lovely concert with very friendly music for the ears.
Well, I think that that's great. You're kicking off the 2022-23 season, and I think there's nothing better, because the 1891 Opera House has such wonderful acoustics.
Yes.
It's a great place for, ensembles to play, duets, duo performers, And when the music is approachable and familiar, it brings the audiences in. And I think you've got a lineup that the listeners should really want to go down and see and just, you know, have a wonderful evening of incredible music, improvisational music, Chopin, Ravel. Oh, my gosh. It's a great program. Great. Listen, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it. And we will look forward to hearing what you have in the coming concert.
Great. Well, it's good to be with you, Tom.
Great. Thank you both very much. I appreciate it.
Sure, you're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye. An Evening of Piano and Viola with David and Anne Rose will be presented on Friday, September 9th, 2022, beginning at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $15 for general admission, $13 for Opera House members, and $10 for students. You can get special two-for-one pricing of $26 by purchasing tickets for the October 28th Pegas and Schulning concert when you buy your tickets for David and Anne Rose. Here's the arts calendar for the upcoming 2 weeks. On Saturday, September 3rd, the cinema series at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House revs up for its next series of films. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris tells the story of a widowed London house cleaner who falls in love with a Dior dress and decides she has to have one. Her quest to purchase the dress leads to a trip to Paris and changes in the house of Dior. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris plays on Saturday, September 3rd and Tuesday, September 6th. Mrs. Harris is followed by Where the Crawdads Sing, an adaptation of the mystery novel by Delia Owens, which tells the story of the mysterious Marsh Girl, who is suspected of killing a young man she had befriended. Where the Crawdads Sing will be screened on Saturday, September 10th and Tuesday, September 13th. All cinema series films begin at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available only at the door and are $7 general admission, $6.50 for Opera House members and seniors, and $5 for students and children. Coming up on Saturday, September 10th at 1 p.m. at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House will be the first presentation in the Arts and Architecture series. Tutankhamun, The Last Exhibition, is a documentary marking the centenary of the discovery of Tutankhamun's tomb in 1922 and the preparation of the exhibit of 150 of the discovered artworks in Los Angeles in 2019. Tickets are $15 general admission, $10 for students. And don't forget, you can now pick up your Flex subscription for the Stage on Screen series for this season for $116, which allows you to mix and match admission to several of the stage and screen events. SUNY Fredonia is also revving up its arts calendar as the fall semester begins. Currently featured at the Marion Art Gallery is a collection of 12 international animated films entitled Independent Motion. The exhibit is currently running and will continue through Thursday, September 8th. See the gallery's website for gallery hours. In the Emmett Christian Gallery, the works of Visual and New Media Department alumna Nika Gray, entitled The Commemorated, a series of 250 paintings, will be up from Thursday, September 1st until Friday, September 9th. The Emmett Christian Gallery is located on the second floor of the Rockefeller Arts Center and is open when the building is open. Finally, at the School of Music, visiting violinist Ari Streisfeld will be offering a masterclass in violin on Sunday, September 11th at 1 p.m., followed by a concert at 4 p.m. in the Rausch Recital Hall. The event is free. The Labor Day weekend is fast upon us, and in Chautauqua County, that can only mean one thing. The Arts Trail Hub Crawl will be open and ready for visitors. Sponsored by the North Shore Arts Alliance, the Hub Crawl offers visitors the opportunity to visit several art studios in the region and see, and also buy, artworks, ranging from pottery to paintings to glasswork. It's becoming a signature event in the region, bookending the beginning and the end of the traditional summer season. I spoke with Marcia Merens, president of the North Shore Arts Alliance, and Lisa Eppolito, a potter who will be participating for the first time in the Hub Crawl.
Well, you know, around the Chautauqua County area, you know it's going to be fall when the Arts Trail comes up. And sure enough, Labor Day weekend will be coming up pretty soon. And I have with me now Marcia Merens. And Marcia, I keep forgetting your title. I don't know if it's president or the North Shore Arts Alliance.
We will do, but it's really president.
President, okay. Of the North Shore Arts Alliance. And they are the organization of artists that get the Arts Trail together every Memorial Day weekend and every Labor Day weekend. And I don't know about you, Marcia, but I could swear I talked to you about the Memorial Day weekend like 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. I think everybody's summer this year, especially with the past two summers being shut down with COVID, it seems this summer has just sped by. Everything is back in full swing. And I think we all feel the pinch of a very busy summer.
I felt the same way too. I mean, all of a sudden I turned around and it was like, wow, it's the end of August. Where did everything go? Also joining us today is Lisa Eppolito. Lisa is going to be one of the artists on the Art Trail. She's a first timer, and she has a pottery studio out in Fredonia. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, so let's get to the nitty gritty, Marcia. Let's start off right away and give us the dates, times, facts, and all of that stuff. Let's get going with that.
Okay. Well, Labor Day weekend is Saturday and Sunday, and all the studios, galleries, hubs are open from 10 to 5 on those days. And there's an interactive map on our website that will help guide you. We also have paper maps that are available at each location to kind of guide you along, and you can plan your day and enjoy not only the studios and the artists, but enjoy Chautauqua County, the restaurants, the views, the hills and dales, and explore a bit. That's what summer is about.
You've got about 14 hubs in this Labor Day one. Is that more or less than you usually have?
It's more. We're growing.
All right.
And we're happy about that. Lisa has a hub. You want to tell them about your hub?
Sure. Yes. Come on, Lisa. Tell me about your hub.
So Wayfaring Potter is located on Seymour Street in Fredonia. And I'm joined with two other potters with whom I wood fire with a local group of potters called the Chautauqua Area Potters. And so I have Sherry Nugent, who's from the Eden, Angola area, and Jesse Simmons, who's from Erie, Pennsylvania. So we do draw other artists because we're working with them. They're within our communities. And so we schlep them along to join our endeavors to make work and get it into people's hands.
And with them come their connections from where they live to come on the trail. So people from outside of Chautauqua County may come. So it's kind of like a sticky note type thing. You touch people and drag them with you. So we're excited about how much we've grown this year and already making plans for next year, actually.
Wow. Yeah, well, you know, the growth is pretty phenomenal. Now, I do want to remind people that hubs are places where more than one artist gathers, right? So
correct. In an inception, the Art Trail was only studios. And we know now that people have studios that are not accessible to the public because sometimes they're in a basement, a bedroom, a kitchen, a laundry room, wherever, a shed. So we found that we can include these artists that have studios and work by just kind of piggybacking onto a location where there's room to put up, in Lisa's case and my case, put up a couple of canopy tents, show tents, and have them outside. And in some areas, like Tom Manier, they can come into his studio because it's large enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at my hub, what's nice about it is that participants who want to join the Art Trail, they can see where the art is made. So what we did was we set up the space so that both of my front and back porches have the work displayed, and off the back porch is my studio, so you can go in and see where the, what the space looks like. So yeah, some of it is to just bring the reality of like how art is made and the spaces they're made in. But, you know, for my two counterparts who are joining me, it also provided them a space as well.
Yeah, that's great. Now, Lisa, you are particularly interested in wood-fired pottery. Is that correct?
Yes.
You use the wood-firing kiln process, but that's not on your studio location. That's someplace else.
Right. So we're the wood-fired potter community in Chautauqua County is affiliated with Mark Buerlin and Ron Naska. And so what they have done for us is pretty much opened up their space. There's a kiln site in Sheridan, and participants who are involved in the group have access to three wood kilns. So the work that Sherry, Jesse, and I are displaying is representative of those three kilns that we fire out of. So there's different techniques we're looking for, or different effects we're looking for based on the kiln. So we have a fast fire kiln, we have a soda wood ash kiln, and an anagama, which is strictly wood. And so the whole notion is that we're trying to capture the effects of fire and wood ash that vitrify and become natural glazes and create patternings on the pot. So a lot of it is about how do you get to make work that interacts with the fiery chamber that it goes into. And so it's a surprise sometimes.
And that's the kind of education you get by talking to the potters and going into the studios. There are galleries on the trail, which are interesting. It's like going into a department store. So there's more than the artists on the art trail in a gallery, but the owner of the gallery generally is an artist themselves in this case, and on the art trail. So that's one kind of unique thing you can do, is go to a place where you can shop. I mean, every place you can shop, but when you go to a studio, I think you get an education. And in my studio, and Lisa's probably too, and Tom's, you should see work in different stages of progression. So it makes sense to you when you see the finished product, what it evolved from.
Yeah, I know, Marcia, you're always very interested in those whimsical things. You love to create those whimsical little things.
They go
things
in the wood fire too.
Do they?
They're tucked in. Yeah. Sometimes I don't use glazes. I just put them in unglazed bisqueware and see what happens. And sometimes it's exciting, sometimes it's okay. But you know what? Somebody will love it, even if I don't think it's great. But to somebody, it speaks to them. So I think that's interesting thing about art. It's not always the creator's eye that makes it. Sometimes it's another eye that finds something in it that you as the creator didn't see or didn't like. So it's always quite interesting in that.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I find that fascinating. I know that, you know, having looked at all kinds of art myself, it's like, it's always in the eye of the beholder, you know, the kinds of things that people really like. So you can't really judge it. Somebody just may want that piece for whatever reason.
Always surprises me.
Yeah. Lisa, I read on your website that you have a fascination with urns. You're very interested in urns as a piece. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, yeah, that was actually a grant that I received from the Tri-County Arts Council back in 2021. And so, yeah, that was something that I had developed a concept around and made a series of urns that, again, were wood-fired in the three kilns at, it's called Scott Creek Fireplace. So your question is what interested me in urns?
Yeah, why that project? Yeah.
Well, I guess part of it was a response to the pandemic. You know, the whole notion of like resilience and coping and so forth. I mean, it's not like the world has not had something like this before. We just don't know it. We just never have lived through it. And so what I decided to do was create three types of urns, burial urns, coffee and tea urns, and plant urns. to represent those three ideas of life, death, and sustenance. And what's cool about the form is that throughout history, urns have been, sometimes it was the water jar that the family used, and then it was used to inter someone later on. So like pottery has been a part of people's lives in so many respects. And so like for me, urns like preserve
culture.
Yeah, culture too, yeah. And like for me, the plant urns that I make, I use those to preserve parts of my garden, which I bring into the house in the winter so that I can have fresh herbs, you know? So with the potter, form and function usually go hand in hand.
So a couple of things I did want to point out, just as overarching the art trail,
sure,
is the QR code that is on all of our marketing. I don't know why I'm showing it to you, because nobody's going to see it, right?
We will, you know, like I did the last time, it's probably going to be in the show notes. So okay, they'll be able to get those QR cards right from the show notes.
So the QR codes will take them to the website, which will bring them any of the information they could possibly be interested in. There are two potters here, but of course we have painters. There'll be two painters at my hub. And photographers and Tom Janik, who's very well known. There are other potters. Reno Pottery is there, and Matt McNaughton, Farm Boy Enterprises, all the way up in Forestville. There are some other new people, and I'm sorry to say I haven't been to their studios yet, unfortunately, but Tina Ames does some whimsical things with herbs and flowers, which I think is lovely. Denise Debbins Williams does glasswork in Westfield at Living Glass Gallery. So there is a whole host and range of inspired artists with wonderful things for you to look at if you come on the art trail.
Yeah, and another component of the art trail we have is a passport. So if you visit all 14 hubs, then you'll be entered to win, what are we winning?
Three $100 gift certificates, which are redeemable at any artist that's on the art trail at no cost to the artist. I mean, the organization is going to reimburse the artist. So yeah, three $100 gift certificates if you manage to get to them all. And of course, this is continuing on from Memorial Weekend. So if Memorial Weekend, you've just got to seven, you can do the other seven easily in 2 days.
No problem. Anything else, Marcia? Anything else you got?
No, I think that's it. I think we talked your ear off a bit, but I'm looking forward. I'm always excited, and Lisa is too, to always talk to people. Artists love to talk about their work and what inspires them and how they do it. So I think no matter what their discipline, you would enjoy the art trail, and I invite all your listeners to visit with us. Surprises, you never know what's going to happen. So
great, wonderful. I mean, I can't honestly, the way that this art trail bookends the entire summer from the beginning in May to the end in September, I just think is lovely. So I can't see why anybody wouldn't get out. And I think the weather's going to hold up for you. I think it's going to be a nice weekend. Okay, Lisa Polito, Marcia Behrens, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and encourage everybody to get out on the art trail on Labor Day weekend. We'll see you out there.
Adios. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Combined with stops at some of the local wineries in the region, the Arts Trail Hub Crawl makes for a fantastic weekend in this rich region of Western New York. You can check the show notes for more information and links to the QR code and passport. And that's it for this Touch of August edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat. My thanks to Ben Baker, David and Ann Rose, Marcia Behrens, and Lisa Eppolito for being my guests on this episode. Notes from the Aisle Seat is a production of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House in Fredonia, New York. For more information on any of the Opera House's events, call the box office at 716-679-1891. Visit the website at www.fredopera.org or email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Notes from the Aisle Seat is now available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, and also on the Opera House YouTube channel. If you like this podcast, please consider following us by clicking the follow button on our website at aisleseat.podbean.com and spreading the word through your social media feeds. If you have an arts event you'd like featured on the podcast, why don't you drop us a line at operahouse@fredopera.org and we'll see about featuring your event. Please try to give us a month's advance notice if possible to facilitate timely scheduling. Our next episode will be on September 14th, 2022. If you have any suggestions, comments, or criticisms of the podcast, just drop us a line at operahouse@fredopera.org. We'll be glad to receive your feedback. I'm Tom Lachlan, and until then, be safe out there and be kind to one another.